Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Are you one of many Americans who are tired of people being bullied and discriminated? You are not alone. Bullying has a rippling effect on the person who is being harassed and everyone associated with the bullied person. The targeted adult or child may have been physically or psychologically bullied. They often bring home their anguish with them, and this can have a crippling effect on everyone associated with the one who's being bullied or discriminated. It's time to shed some light on how to reduce bullying in the school systems, how to create safe and healthy work environments for employees. I blow the whistle on how to protect yourself if you're being bullied and educate listeners on their rights if they're being bullied or discriminated. I bring in the best experts who provide empowering strategies, tips on resiliency, how to handle the experience of being bullied or discriminated, how to heal and overcome the effects of being mistreated. If you are ready to gain knowledge and insights on bullying and discrimination, you are in the right place. Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Hi, and welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Today, I have somebody who has not only survived bullying, but is a thriver. Now, every day, somebody reaches out to me to tell me about their bullying or their traumatic event that's happened to them. And I'm always looking for people who are taking action that are not just surviving, but thriving. Well, today's guest is Andy Grant, and he's a best-selling author. He's a speaker, a transformational energy coach, an Akashic Records reader, and he's the founder of Real Men Feel. And that's a movement encouraging men to come out of the emotional closet. So, Andy, welcome. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Well, thank you. So we were talking before we started the recording about, you know, coincidences or, you know, synergy. And I'm just so happy that I have met you as a connection. So you have an incredible story that very few people can tell. And you survived multiple suicide attempts. And I'd like you to tell the listeners a little bit about your past, you know, as a child and what led you up to where you're at now.
Okay, to cram my life into a short story, I'll do the best I can. And it makes me want to laugh to think of that my story is this incredible story, because it just felt like a really gross life to live for a long time to me. But, you know, I really had this worldview from a very young age that the world, frankly, just sucked, that life sucked, and I was really just here to die. I didn't have any sort of spiritual or religious beliefs. And when I was 5 years old, my parents got divorced. And this is the 70s. This was no one else I knew had divorced parents. And at the same time, I started to be molested by a neighbor. And the divorce was very acrimonious. I never saw my dad without lawyers and police being involved first. And I didn't think this consciously at the time, but my fear was that if I told anyone that I had been molested, I mean, I'd be in trouble, that I'd get thrown out of the house. I'd be the next man to be kicked out and be on the streets. So I really grew up believing that the world wasn't safe. And, you know, I certainly had bullying experiences. I really, you know, I probably put off this victim energy, and I would cower and try to avoid being seen. And I think bullies can just sense that. So I, you know, certainly, you know, chased and harassed and called names and, you know, a lot of the typical things that people go through. But I took it extra hard because it was more evidence that just life itself was against me, that being alive was not a pleasant experience. So, you know, I can still consciously remember being like 8 years old and planning how to die, and that I had no interest in being adults. One of the things my father often said to me was that high school were the best years of your life. And, you know, only looking back that I realized, you know, he was 20 years old telling me this. So he hadn't had much experience beyond high school. but I thought, well, if, you know, school's really, I feel horrible, you know. I did well in school, which just got me bullied. I felt like I had to hide my gifts. I had to dumb myself down just to get by each day. But I thought, well, if high school is where the peak is, you know, I'll graduate high school and then I'll kill myself. So from, again, like age 8 on, I really thought 18 would be, you know, the longest I would live. And I made multiple attempts, as my first attempt was at age 13 to really just, you know, to pull the plug. And it was really just this, you know, mentality of, I don't like this anymore. I'm going to take my ball and go home. I was just, I quit.
Wow. That's amazing. And you talked about, you know, riding your bike as a child and bullies threatening to kill you. Would you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I was actually, so I was an only child. And again, I was pretty quiet, kept to myself, you know, had a best friend, not a big group of friends. But I remember even as old as like into junior high, into seventh grade, bullies chasing me and saying, we're going to kill you. You better stop. You better come out here. And I had no experience. Like when they said that, I believed them. Mm-hmm. I thought these guys are going to find me and literally kill me. So it was terrifying. And you know, I remember just hiding and just desperate to find my way back home. And just, you know, it was just so much more than, you know, being called names or, you know, running before someone punched me. I really thought I was going to be torn limb from limb by these group of older kids. And a few years later, I actually became friends with one of them. And I never had the nerve to say, do you remember chasing me around and threatening to kill me? You know,
oh, my gosh.
I never brought it up.
So did he or she change? I mean, did they become a better person?
Yeah, they might. Well, I met that person because they stayed back in school and I ended up helping them in school. So, you know, we became friends. But I never, you know, said, hey, remember when you were in your bullying days? That was, you know, one of those kids was me. I never brought it up.
Wow. That it's funny, but it's sad. And I have to tell you, it's so refreshing, Andy, that you're so open and transparent. You know, I spent 20 years in the Air Force where even the women we had to hold our feelings inside. We would never show anybody that we're vulnerable or transparent, or you would be perceived as weak, but there's nothing weak about you. You're very powerful.
Yeah, it took me a long time to get, you know, I was not always this way. I certainly hid my feelings and didn't want anyone to know. And, you know, I was a cutter in like seventh and eighth grade, and teachers and guidance counselors would see it and they would question me and try to give me help. And I wanted no part of help. You can't help someone if they don't want help. So I always had a story, had a concussion, had a reason, you know, a knife slip, making a sandwich and all sorts of nonsense. But I was a good student. So people were glad to believe my nonsense. Right? No adults wanted to believe that Andy was a mess, right?
That's so interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I know as a female, I was bullied very badly, also sexually harassed, sexually molested, and I know it can lead to insecurity and even overcompensating. Did you ever feel you had to be an overachiever to prove yourself?
Oh, I'm sure. You know, I tried, I was always a heavy kid, and I think it was like freshman year of high school, I hung out with someone in my neighborhood and who was an athlete, and I tried to like match their routine and keep up with them, jogging and lifting weights and stuff. And that person went on to have like a stellar collegiate athlete career, setting records in high school and college, and I'm struggling and thinking I'm a loser because I couldn't keep up with them. So I was, I took on too good of a mentor to try to match physically. If I excelled, it wasn't because of that I was good at something. It's hard to say this. I didn't feel like I didn't have resilience. I was just naturally smart. Like everyone told me, oh, school comes so easy to you. So I didn't feel like I had a strength. You know, school was just easy. All right. So I didn't need to study. So if there ever came a time where I needed to study, I felt like a failure.
I see. So something shifted in you. And I know a lot of times it's a mindset. What was the aha moment? When did you realize that, hey, I have the right to feel good and feel empowered?
Yeah, it was, I was a very, you know, for talking about how smart I was a very slow learner in this respect, that it was only after multiple failed attempts to end my life that I remember sitting there crying in my bed, realizing that I can't even do this right. I mean, there's got to be a better way to navigate my life. And it finally, I began to have just the dimmest possibility of hope. And the notion that, well, if I can't die, maybe there's a reason I'm here and there's something I'm supposed to do that I haven't figured out yet. So that was the first time I was consciously willing to entertain a thought like that. And, you know, that started me on kind of my personal growth quest and being willing to talk about how bad I felt. Because until that point, I only met other kids talking about suicidal feelings in mental hospitals, which just made me feel more broken, more diseased, you know, more helpless. So these days, I'm glad to see it's talked about more and more in the open. But it certainly wasn't when I was growing up.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that. And since we've both been in the mental health ward, I remember being in the mental health ward and being embarrassed about it and hating being on all that medicine. I didn't find that empowering. It was the third day that I was in the mental health ward and I was told I could have a shower. I was standing in front of the mental mirror, I said mental mirror, but I guess that's what I meant. And I'm looking at myself. I didn't recognize myself and I had a hate fest. And at that time, that's when I realized I was sick and tired of being the old Dawn Westmoreland. So is that what happened to you, Andy, that you just got tired of being you, the old you?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think I had depression. I thought I was depression. Oh. I thought, and I wasn't always like, there were good moments. I had happy times, but I thought those were the anomalies. Those were the lies. And the truth of my existence was the depression, you know, the suicidal thoughts, the not wanting to get out of bed, the, you know, sleeping for 18 hours a day at times. Just, I thought that was really me.
Yeah, and I understand depression and anxiety. Well, moving forward, once you had that awakening, that transformation, boom, all of a sudden now you're a best-selling author, you're an award-winning speaker, you're working with people like Mike Dooley, Bill Harris, David Morelli, and so many other people. What happened? Something awakened in you, something huge.
Yeah, and it was a long succession of booms, I would say. It definitely wasn't overnight. It was just, you know, kind of overnight, I was willing to see that there was more. But for a long time, anytime I ran into difficulties, suicidal thoughts were my default. And it took me a while to realize that was just my default. And, you know, I really believe that if you've ever seriously contemplated suicide, that thought is always somewhere in your head and it's looking for moments of weakness to show up again. Whoa. And these days I can laugh at it. Like I can remember having a flat tire and wanting to jump into traffic. Like that was enough. And I just like, you know, that's just so silly. Like that's how I was almost like living, looking for a final straw to just push me over the edge. But now I can laugh at that. And I just, it's you know, the simplest, best piece of advice I ever discovered was from Louise Hay. That it's only a thought and a thought can be changed.
Oh, and, my goodness. You know, I love her.
I grew up being taught by doctors and people trying to help me, telling me that, you know, I was broken. My chemicals were out of whack. I was flawed. And no one gave me hope. They just kept throwing me pills. And like you mentioned, you know, when I was in high school and on medication for the first time, I felt sedated. I remember walking just straight into my locker. I didn't know what was going on. And I thought, if this is like normal life, like I was more suicidal than ever. I wanted nothing to do with feeling like this.
Yeah, that makes sense because I was on a lot of heavy medication and I might have needed it at the time. And I do think that sometimes people do need medication and it might be for a short time. But I think what's most empowering is that the change in you is knowing that you don't have to be a victim, that you can own your life. And that's what you're doing now. So what are you doing right now? I know you're doing some workshops. You're doing the Real Men Feel podcast. What else are you doing? And let's talk about all these great contributions you're making to the world.
Yeah. So Real Men Feel is a weekly podcast. I've been doing it for about 2.5 years. And before that, since 2010, I've been working as a coach, a transformational energy coach. I was trained to tune into people as kind of an intuitive technique of reading energy, of reading blocks. And these are all tools that I learned to save my life. And it was during that, it helped me let go of thought patterns and habits that I've outgrown, but were still within me. were energetically attached to my thinking and way of being. So it was a year-long program, and it really saved my life. It kind of cleaned me out. It made me realize how powerful I was. It made me realize I had all sorts of talents and skills, and that I could help people. So that's when I kind of really made the shift and decided, all right, I'm going to serve people. I'm gonna coach people. And, you know, I ended up really being a lightning rod for people that had attempted or at least thought of suicide. And I made a number of videos talking about how I felt. And over the years since 2010, every time I was willing to share more, every time I was vulnerable, I would get an influx of clients and attention and people just saying thank you. So that's kind of the biggest insight I've had is I can't share enough. Mm-hmm. The more open I am, the more people I help, because people can see like, oh my God, that's how I feel, or that's how I felt, or that's how I'm afraid of feeling. And when you can, again, I only saw people like that in mental hospitals, but I never saw someone succeed. I never met an adult that said, oh yeah, when I was 16, I really thought I wanted to die, but now I don't, and life is great. I never saw that person when I was growing up. So that's what prompted me going public. Mm-hmm. And it prompted me I wrote a book called Still Here, How to Succeed at Life After Failing at Suicide. And it's everything I wish I knew when I was 17. It's full of all the techniques that I've learned over the years and daily practices and rituals that I still use that keep me in tune with life, with the joy of being alive, which is something that everybody has a right to feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can hear it in your voice. I can feel your energy that you're full of life and such. So what do you think about this? Do you think that the people in your life, to include your parents, were all part of your growth to become who you are today?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, none of what I went through was because my parents didn't love or support me. And that's kind of another thing that just confused people. You know, my parents are willing to do anything to help me feel better, but for a long time, I wasn't willing to tell them anything. I was not willing to share. And I thought I was so broken, I didn't want to waste anybody's time.
Ah, okay. Did you ever think that you might be your own worst bully?
You know, I could definitely see myself as my own worst enemy, but I never thought but it's true. I never realized, you know, I was bullying myself. And that's true. Yeah. My self-talk was horrible. You know, I treated myself far worse than I would ever treat a stranger, the things I would say and think to myself. But yeah, so that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, because I agree. I was my own worst bully. And once I realized that, I said, no more. We're not going to have that anymore. I know in coaching, and all of us have different practices, a lot of times you're talking about that inner voice. You said it a different way, but that inner voice. Well, if that inner voice says you're not worthy, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you're not handsome enough, what would you tell a client if they were telling you that?
Again, it's just a thought. And your brain is designed to answer questions. So when I was asking, why do I suck? Why is life so hard? Why does nothing go my way? Why am I better off dead? My brain would give me answers. But when I learned to ask better questions, like how can today be better than yesterday? Right? How can I feel good right now? Right? What thought can I think that will make me feel better? That got different answers. So just because your brain says it doesn't mean it's true. Right? It's just your brain doing its best attempt to answer the questions that you're asking it.
Yeah, I'm laughing because, you know, we always, in the coaching program I went through, which is IPAC coaching, we always called it the little gremlin that was talking to you. And we'd give it a name and we'd say, hush up. You know, I called mine Rudy. You know, hush up, Rudy. I'm not listening to you today, because that's not a true statement. That's not true at all. So you do a lot of holistic work with clients. Let's talk about the different things you do. You're a transformational energy coach, Akashic Records reader, and I know you do the prevention activist, and you have certificates in positive psychology and waking coaching system. Soul Entrainment, Infinite. I can't even get the word out. Infinite possibilities of
Infinite
Reiki.
possibilities.
I'm sorry, but I'm human, and I do make mistakes saying words. But you know, let's talk about some of the different holistic treatments and such that you do, the modalities, and you can start anywhere you want.
Yep. So the Enwaken program was the energy coaching program. That was the first, you know, long-term personal growth thing I ever went to, and that's what turned me on to being a coach. And that was, you know, it was very woo-woo. I got into that because I was on an internet call with thousands of people for a guided meditation, and I'd always had trouble meditating. I think this was like 2008 probably. And we were guided through something that wasn't a meditation. It was, you know, connect to light and have it pour down into you and feel it course through your body. And my whole body was shaking. And I could see light coming out of the palms of my hands. And I was like, what the hell is this? I'm like, whatever it is, I want to learn how to do it because this is amazing. So that was my first experience with you know, energy work. And I, you know, I didn't know what to think. I'd never even heard the term. But, you know, I've learned to trust my experiences as opposed to my mind and my ego. So I knew whatever this is, I want to learn it. So that was led by David Morelli, and I followed him for a few years until he finally taught people how to do it. So I was one of the first, I was part of the first graduating class of Enwaken, which taught us how to tune into the energy of a person or situation and really get to the root, and through guided meditations and energy work, clear the root problem, the root cause of any problem. And after that, I wanted, you know, because I excelled in school, and I knew there was a lot of scientific people, and everything I was doing is something that I used to make fun of. So I pursued the positive psychology program. That was another year-long program, and that had all the science. And I thought that was really going to challenge some of my spiritual beliefs, mm-hmm. but it didn't. It just showed me how much science is catching up and proving the notion of spirit and positive thinking and gratitude. And I learned all of this research about the things that I discovered myself that helped me enjoy life. So they came together beautifully. And again, depending on the audience I'm talking to, I can speak from the positive psychology aspect, or I can go all energy on them.
Well, you can go any way you want to go, because I think it's important for everybody to understand that, you know, scientists even have proven everything is energy. So mm-hmm. our thoughts are energy. Our thoughts form our belief system and such. So I know what Reiki or Reiki, depending on how people say it, is. I know what it is. It's energy work. Do you mind describing it to our listeners? Because I know there'll be somebody saying, what is that?
Yeah, and that's why I always call myself just an energy coach, and it's energy work, because there are so many different modalities, and they're all kind of named after who created them or when they were founded. But Reiki and all of them come down to someone tuning in to source energy, tuning in to the spiritual aspect, tuning in to life itself, that the force, if you're a Star Wars fan, right? The force is real. And from my perspective, the force is love. And it's not conditional love. It's not romantic love. It's the love life has. It's the love you feel when you create something, or you expand, or you learn something. You have that aha. That's the love of life itself. Mm. And again, to me, energy work is somebody tuning into that, and they have an ability to just be a straw, to be a vessel, and pass it on to someone else, to help a client discover something, to help a healing happen. Be it physical, mental, or spiritual. So to me, that's how I describe Reiki and really all types of energy work.
Yeah, great. And you know, I do that every month at least. I have somebody work on me and do energy work. And I'm a very super sensitive person, so I feel things shift in my body, and I sense a release of something. I've even cried when somebody was working on me once, and I only let so many people work on me. So,
And you know, speaking of crying, I want to point one thing. Growing up, I cried a lot. I would cry at movies and music and concerts, and commercials would bring me to tears. And I thought if I was crying, that meant I was depressed. And if I was crying, that meant like a suicide attempt was right around the corner. I think I was 30 years old before I realized tears of joy were like a real thing. And I could see a sunset or a painting and appreciate it so much that it moved me emotionally. And, you know, I just shut those things off because I thought happy people were flying above me. They were just all so happy. And it was this flat line of just joy. And I also thought those people were crazy. I thought they were lying to themselves. You know, like the real, you know, the realist is down here in the mud, knowing that everything stinks, right? That's real, man. But with, like so many things, I'm so glad to discover that I was wrong. And that was another big shift for me to take joy in discovering all the things I was wrong about.
Oh, that's a lot of growth. And would you say that people also give you growth?
People that I serve?
Well, people in your life.
Oh,
in
yeah.
all aspects. I mean,
no,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't. Humans don't grow in a vacuum. And I have found my love of service, of helping someone else, always helps me. You know, anytime I do a healing, anytime I open somebody's Akashic records, like I get so much benefit from it.
Yeah, I can see how it'd be very cathartic helping other people. And do you ever get triggered by helping people that may have been suicidal or tried to commit suicide? Do you ever get triggered by that?
No, I haven't. There have been times where, like, that's I attracted so many of those people. It made me, you know, again, wonder, well, what's wrong with me? Why can I only connect with these people? You know, it was depressing, heavy energy work, but it didn't trigger me into having suicidal thoughts myself. But it did at times feel like a real grind.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, that helped me shift and realize I could talk about other subjects too. I remember a few years ago, I was teaching a live workshop on ebook publishing for entrepreneurs. And someone said they came just to see me in person because they wanted to see if I was real. Because
oh,
I was
my.
So happy. And on my online videos, I was so happy. They wanted to see if I was real. And my wife was there too. I'm like, so honey, am I always so happy? I'm fake. And she just, we're just cracking up. I'm like, you know, and that's a challenge I have to be aware of. Because again, there's part of this old identity that I am depression, and like, you know, don't question that I'm like too falsely happy or something, because I'll go into depression just to show you something, you know. So there's still that part of there's still those gremlins there. Yeah.
Well, I want to jump back to being in the mental health ward. While you were there, tell me, did you have any positive experiences? Maybe some aha moments, or where you realized that maybe your thinking was just so backwards or not positive for you.
Yeah. So my first and longest experience was when I was a senior in high school, and I was there. I was at McLean's Hospital outside Boston, which I had never heard of, but was supposedly one of the world's leading hospitals. I was there for 3 weeks, and my parents took me out against medical advice because I had such strong reactions to the medication. I had full body seizures, hallucinations. I couldn't walk. And they told my parents that one of my friends must have slipped me drugs. And I was very anti-drug because I didn't like the prescription drugs. And I thought if I needed to be drunk, if I needed to be high all the time, then I'd rather be dead. Like if my life was so bad, I had to like use something to convince me to stick around, that was just as bad. So, and the only two friends that visited me were like, again, like, you know, top athletes and like the straightest kids that could be. And, you know, my mom knew that, well, I know that's not what happened here. That was really when it got ingrained in me that like, yeah, I'm not good with medication. I don't trust this stuff. It's a lot of guesswork for me. But one thing that I realized was taken out of my day-to-day life, I felt fine quickly. Right. If it was, you know, going to group therapy and watching TV and having arts and crafts and like, well, this is easy life. And I'm like, oh, fine. If I just stayed in a mental hospital, I guess I could live to be a ripe old age. Maybe I can do this. But then they talked about releasing me and I was like, oh, no. You know, so it was confusing. I mean, I could see how tied to circumstances I was. Right. That it wasn't just that something was chemically wrong in my brain, that I was always depressed. It was very situational. Right. My depression, it seemed to be very reactive, and sometimes reactive just to nothing, like the flat tire story. Like I could be reactive to just nothing that warranted such a reaction. But again, it was my kind of default response was to think about killing myself anytime I came up against something tough.
Gosh, I can't even imagine. I remember checking into the mental health ward because I felt victimized and broken. And the thing is that they took the shoelaces away off my boots. And I'm like, wait a minute, it was on my mother's birthday. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to call my mother. She's in another state. And, you know, the notification of who's calling goes across her TV. And I'm like, oh my God, it's going to say Dawn's in the mental health ward.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I had.
But I laugh about it now because it's where I needed to be for the transformation. And I think it was very transforming for you too.
Yeah. And I'll tell you that. So my first four mental hospitals, I were all against my will. It was following an attempt. It was an ambulance brought me to there. And, but after college, in the mid 90s, I was feeling depressed and I'm like, oh, here I go again. I thought this was over. And I put myself into a hospital, because I just didn't feel safe. And until then, you know, I thought that I had to make an attempt, and after an attempt, I felt better. So this is the first time that, wait, maybe I can just seek help without an attempt. And, oh, I can. Hey, and look, I feel better. But for me, this rut, this habit that got ingrained in me, distorted habit, was that the way I get help is by attempting to end my life, and then help arrives.
Wow.
So it was fun. I laughed because I feel like, wow, I feel like such an adult. I'm asking for help. And, you know, I was like, I must have grown somewhere along the way.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that men have just as strong of feelings. They have, you know, setbacks and hurts and pains just like women. And, you know, us women, we get on the phone, you know, talk, and we feel better even if nothing's changed. How can men grow and also, as you say, come out of the emotional closet? How can they become more empowered, Andy?
Drop the act. Every man is walking around wearing a mask that says, I've got it all figured out.
Mm.
And the truth is none of us do, right? The Dalai Lama has bad days where he's not happy and joyous. I guarantee it. And he's admitted to such, right? But
yeah.
It's just... You know, I've run men's group, and guys will show up and say, I came to this because I don't have anyone I can talk to. And I'm like, well, you really don't have any friends? Well, I have friends, but I can't tell them the stuff like that we're going to talk about here. And at the end of that hour, I go, you know, so raise your hands if you came here because you didn't have any friends that you could talk to. And like, you know, six guys raise their hands. I go, well, do you have six friends now that you can tell things to? And like, oh. And like, and what made that happen? Your willingness to say something first. So any man that is feeling shut down, that is feeling alone and isolated and unworthy and miserable and guilty and angry, whatever it is, tell somebody, right? When you're brave enough to be vulnerable, I find that you are met with someone else's authentic vulnerability as well. And you'll discover you're not alone. You'll discover that other people can admit to feeling very similar ways and discover that everyone's wearing that mask.
Well said, well said. Yeah, because I realize that women have no problem. I've been on the phone most of the day. I've had a slow day today, and it's mostly women that have had a rough day. They have no problem calling, but the guys tend to hold it inside. So I think it's important because when they hold back, that, you know, that stuff builds up, and the next thing you know, you're having health issues, mental health issues, and it's just not worth it.
Yeah. So. And physical health issues, like you know, stress is destroying bodies, right? So it's not only mental health, like you physical pains, everything in the body starts as energy, and shut down, repressed emotions can show up as physical pains and diseases.
Oh, I'm 100% convinced on that. Absolutely. So tell me a success story of somebody you worked with. We won't use names, obviously, but maybe somebody that was in pretty bad shape and they're really empowered now. I'd love to hear a good story.
Yeah. So there are multiple like this, but someone will come to me, you know, in tears, thinking they're crazy, depressed, talking about feeling suicidal, and energy work, because it checks into the root It's not talk therapy. It's not telling your story. It's tuning into what's really there and moving it. So after just 2 to 3 months, that the person I'm thinking of went on to be a speaker, going to schools and talking about how sad and depressed and isolated they were. And now they're this shining example, and especially for young girls. And they've created all sorts of programs and have been traveling the world even. And, you know, it's not even 2 years since they were so low. And now they're an international speaker.
That's amazing. How can women support men in becoming more empowered, more vulnerable, more transparent?
This is a good one, because I have seen women say they want men to be more emotional and open, but then when the man is, they seem shocked and don't know what to do and can retreat. So be aware of what you're asking for, and when it shows up, there's nothing you need to do. You just listen. Like, don't retreat, don't back down. You know, if a man finally opens up, and you know, if it's screaming and yelling, or if it's tears and sadness, if it's grief and shame, just be there. Right? Your presence is enough to break down the fear that most men have, including myself, that if I tell them the truth, they'll leave me, they'll abandon me, they'll turn their backs. That's the big fear for many men when it comes down to sharing their emotions. So there might not be anything you need to do except just stay there, right? Be willing to stand there and as your man shares whatever's going on for them.
Awesome advice, very awesome advice. So what do you have that you're working on right now? Any books, any kind of courses, anything that you're working on right now to help empower men more?
Yeah, I have a live workshop that I've done called To Be a Man, when we just like ask that question, and I encourage people to look at their definition of masculinity and examine where it came from, and were they taught what it means to be a man by people who were rather miserable men. And it's a very engaging way to redefine your sense of what it means to being a man, because every man is a man because they are a man, right? There are no requirements. There's nothing to prove. Mm-hmm. But I'm in the process of turning that into an online program, so it can reach people all around the world, not just people that come stand in front of me for a few hours. That's the big thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Real Men Feel, we're about to hit our 100th episode. And when I started it 2.5 years ago, my goal was to do it monthly. And by the second month, we were doing it weekly. And it's just been a phenomenal experience. And it keeps bringing in new opportunities and connections and people. It's just been phenomenal. So that's been the big joy. And I'm looking forward to seeing how much that can grow and reach more people. And just, again, sharing and reminding men that they are human. And all human beings have the right to their full emotional range. There aren't some emotions that are for men and some that are for women. There are some that are more accepted. There are some that might be easier to express. But we all have all of the emotionals, all the emotional range. And we're entitled as human beings to allow them, to express them, and to share them.
That's amazing. That's just amazing what you're doing. So I also know that you're the lead editor and contributor at the Good Men Project. What do you do with the Good Men Project?
So I edit multiple pieces. So the Good Men Project is all about exploring what masculinity is today. And I'm going to get this wrong. I'm going to say 5 million visitors each month to it. Yeah, I'll say that. And it might be wrong.
Hey, we're allowed to be human. You just told me so.
Yep, that's right. And what I loved about that, so I was doing Real Men Feel already, and I like to call it, you know, conversations that most men aren't having. And the Good Men Project, it's goodmenproject.com, and it's just full of articles, and we publish 35 different articles every single day, every day of the year. And their tagline is the conversation no one else is having. I was like, oh my God, that's what I'm doing. So I began as a contributor, and anyone can be a contributor. You can, there's just a simple submission form. We're glad to post things that have already been published. You can premiere pieces on the Goodman Project, and you still have the rights to post them other places. But I went from contributor to a weekly contributor to being an editor and now lead editor. And again, I get to see so many different people's stories and read stories. I'm like, oh man, I went through this. And it just keeps reminding me, again, of the masks, that people are so similar. And it's not just written by men for men. There are lots of female contributors and writers and editors and readers. There's sections on masculinity, on sports, as well as sex and relationships and spirituality. It's really, anything that can affect a man's life, which is pretty much anything that can affect a woman's life as well, is covered at the Good Men Project.
Yes, and I've known about the Good Men Project for a while. I'm really glad to be part of it, and I would encourage others that are listening in to definitely check the goodmenproject.com. They're doing amazing work. You're doing amazing work. And if people would like to hire you, Andy, or find out more about you, connect with you with your book, just stay in touch, tell us how we can stay in touch with you.
Great. So the best way to find me online is at theandygrant.com, because you don't want to settle for just a run-of-the-mill Andy Grant. You want the Andy Grant. And from that, you have links to all of my books. Yeah, there are links to Real Men Feel. There's links to coaching. There's links to I have three different online classes. One that I really love, which is based all on the positive psychology program, is called Improve Your Life and Happiness with the Power of Gratitude. And it's got thousands of students, and it's rated 5 stars from people all around the world. So that's one thing that I'm really proud of, and is out there impacting people. But I have Akashic Record readings. I have coaching programs. And I'm always glad to talk to someone first, just a free chat to learn more about you and see how I might be able to help you.
That's amazing. And as I wrap up, Andy, I want to say this. I know this because I work, with peer podcasters in mental health. I know for a fact that 1 out of 4 people have mental health issues, and that's count women and men. But let's say for the men that they know they're struggling or they're having mental health issues, and that could be from anxiety to depression to something more. What kind of encouragement would you give these men?
Be brave enough to ask for help. It's a lie that the rugged individual is the tough guy. You know, the bravest thing you can do at times is to ask for help. So I just encourage from the bottom of my heart to have the courage to say, I'm feeling like crap and I need help. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that to a friend, to a coworker, to a toll-free suicide prevention line. I've used those. And you can, if you don't want anyone to know, you're anonymous, that's not tracked. Right. There are limitless ways to get help, but it all starts with you just raising your hand saying, I'm willing to ask for help.
So what I'm hearing is that we should not have stigma around mental health problems.
Everybody has mental health.
Yeah.
maybe it's not a problem.
Well, I have to ask you, has anybody said, I'm glad you failed?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And I've gotten that a lot. And it doesn't get old. And actually, when I first made my first video telling my story, I think it was in 2009. And I said, well, if I can impact and help one person, then maybe all the pain I've gone through is worth it. And it wasn't a day later that I got my first, email from someone I didn't know saying, thanks. I was planning to kill myself when I came across your video. And I just want to say thank you. And that never gets old either. But, the more all of us, the more any person shares, the bigger impact you have on other people.
Well, I have to say and add to the list that I'm very glad that you failed at suicide, because you are a very powerful man. And I know you're out there empowering other men. And when men are empowered, it also leads to empowered women. So, Andy, thank you. You're awesome. You're a breath of fresh air. Thank you for being a thriver. And thank you for your authenticity, your transparency, and also for the laughs about the mental health ward.
My pleasure.
Because the mental health ward is not a bad place. It's a lot of times where we get the best transformation.
Sure. Yeah. It helps. It's a place meant to help you.
Absolutely. Well, Andy, again, thanks again for being on the show. To everybody, please check out Andy Grant at the Goodman Project and theandygrant.com. And you also have Facebook. You can go to Andy Grant, Love Your Life. Everyone, stay empowered, and I look forward to speaking to you on the next episode. Thank you, Andy. Thank you for listening to the Empowered Whistleblower. As your host, I will continue to bring in the best experts to share their knowledge and empower our listeners. Nobody has to feel like a victim. There are solutions to bullying and discrimination. Everyone deserves to be treated with respect and dignity. All our future shows will offer practical guidance so that anyone can choose to stand up to bullying and discrimination. You deserve to be happy, and life is all about choices. I always welcome comments and suggestions for new shows. Please comment and share your ideas, and be sure to come back for more inspiration and empowerment. I am Dawn Marie Westmoreland signing off and wishing you much happiness and empowerment in your day.